This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for joining us for another great show. Today, we're going to be talking about federal jobs. And we're going to be talking about how to land a top-paying federal job. As a matter of fact, that is the title of the book that's out there by Lily Whiteman. She is a federal careers expert. She does a column at Federal Times. And she has also authored this book that is in its second edition and updated with a number of new areas that really talks about this kind of ever-evolving federal hiring process. She's in studio with me today at Fed Access. Lily, thank you for coming by.
Great to see you again, Derek. Thanks for having me.
You know, talk to me about this book. It feels thicker. It is thicker. You know, a lot of times, and we've had a lot of different things, I think, since me and you talked, and your first edition came out, everything from hiring reform has changed, all these other kind of elements, the pathway programs, all these things are new. You know, but before we get into that, you know, when we talk about the myths of federal jobs, I mean, a lot of people have these misperceptions about what does it mean to get a federal job, maybe a misperception about the federal job search. You cover that in the book. What are you saying in that?
Well, I think a lot of people have a stereotypical notion of federal employees, and particularly during these times when feds are getting knocked by the political system. Yeah. A lot of people think that, you know, we're dim-witted Cliff Clavin types. And that we're lazy and uncreative, and I find that to be completely untrue, that some of the smartest people I know are my colleagues. Everybody works really hard, and they care deeply about what they're doing. But there are other misconceptions, such as some people still think you have to take a civil service test, and that is long gone. And the whole hiring system, I guess we can talk about that as the hour progresses, but has been completely revamped. So the book reflects that also.
Right. So really, there's a lot of different changes, and people need to kind of get these misperceptions because they may be missing some great opportunities.
Absolutely.
In terms of working for the federal government. You hit on something that's really important to me. I know I addressed it in my Washington Post article this week about politicians constantly beating up on federal workers. I mean, you know, these are the same politicians who they need, you know, in order to do the job. I mean, and you're a federal worker yourself. You've worked in the federal government. And what do you feel is the morale during this political season? Does it hurt federal workers? I mean, as a person who experiences it yourself, do you feel like it hurts the perception? Does it feel like it hurts morale when you hear the politicians talking this way?
Well, you know, on a day-to-day basis, we've got our nose to the ground, really. It's only when you pick up the newspaper or watch TV and see some of the wrong things that people are saying. And I was interested to see a few months ago an ad on the TV by the Postal Service Union saying what they do. And I've never seen a group of federal employees have to really defend themselves that much. That was a first for me. And I think it's too bad that I haven't seen any politicians get up there and say, you know, your water is clean because of the federal government. Your food is safe to eat. The planes, there hasn't been a plane crash of a major airliner in a number of years. Those are just a few examples that feds really keep this country going.
Right.
And
right.
we're needed and right. underappreciated.
Right. You know, I went to the Service to American Medals Awards, and that's what we were talking about. And I think your book reflects that, is that the federal government, in terms of the innovation, and those awards reflected it as well, in terms of the people who were winning awards were, you know, government workers who are on the grind, who care about service, who weren't looking there for recognition. They just really wanted to help you know, mankind. They wanted to help their fellow citizen. They wanted to solve unique problems.
Right.
And I mean, I think that's what you're coming to in the book about that misperception that the government's lazy. I mean, you get a couple people here and there.
In every sector.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Exactly. In the private sector, you got people who are deadwood. Exactly. Exactly. Going into the book, as we get into chapter one, and we're going to kind of break this down, this this show, chapter by chapter. You talk about a great time to go federal. I mean, in that, a lot of people are kind of saying, well, the federal government's shrinking and, you know, this, that, and the other. People aren't retiring. Why would you say it's a great time to go federal?
Well, the federal government will always be the nation's, if not the world's biggest employer. I think maybe the Chinese army employs
right,
more people. But that's
right.
it. And
right.
no matter what happens, even if sequestration happens, which we hope it won't, mm-hmm. That's still going to be true.
Right.
And so that means there's always going to be churn and turnover, and the government, federal government, will always be hiring. USA Jobs is not going anywhere.
Right.
USAJobs.gov, the central federal hiring website. And there's always going to be great opportunities. And I do see a lot of retirements among people I've worked with, people I do work with. The federal retirement
is that,
wave.
Is that fear of not retiring? Is that, you know, how people talked about the fear, you know, people because the economy wasn't doing as good, this, that, and the other. Are you starting to see people feel a lot more comfortable about possibly retiring right now, and we're going to maybe see that in the next 3 to 5 years?
And it's the baby boomers are coming of age. So that's the real cause of the retirement wave, that you can't work forever. The wave might be somewhat delayed than it was predicted, but it is happening and it's going to continue to happen. So
so it's a good time.
It's always a good time.
And really what you're saying is, no matter what time of year it is, even if you hear about these budget cuts, even if you hear about certain things, would you say to the federal worker, don't be oblivious to it. Maybe watch it, but don't let it necessarily negate you from applying for federal jobs.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we have to remember that a couple of great things about federal jobs, they're secure. You don't have to worry if your boss looks at you the wrong way that you're going to be heading out the door the next minute. And you get to do work on public policy and generally make a better income or higher income than in the nonprofit world. But you don't have to have the pressures. Or if you're not into the bottom line, then private industry isn't for you.
Sure. You know, as you're going, and we talk about the job search, and I think many people get frustrated with this. What do you recommend in the book in terms of not to reveal every single secret, but what are you recommending with this job search? I mean, in terms of the federal government.
Well, I think, and you talk about this a lot in your column, which I read religiously
in the
Washington Post,
yeah.
The Mutual Admiration
right, exactly,
Society,
exactly.
is you have to target your application to the job and look at your application as an answer to the job announcement as a question, can you do this job? And look at your application as an opportunity to say it in as many ways as possible, yes, I can do this job because I have done it and I've done it really well in the past. And you prove you've done it well by validating your credentials with the objective positive feedback you've gotten. I see so many people let this opportunity go by. They just say what they did without describing why they did it well. Mm. And did you get great performance evaluations? Did you get good evaluations in events that you ran? Did you get complimentary emails? Those are just a few of the many ways that I instruct people to validate their credentials.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important. Who would you think is more impressive? Somebody who says, I'm wonderful, than somebody who just shows you the gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing
mm-hmm.
is believing. You want to put objective evidence in. So tailor it and show why you're the best person.
And so many people seem to have that problem, and it may be an exercise of having somebody help them pull it out or not, but so many people seem to have the problem of talking about their success stories. And what you're saying is critical. I mean, because in a competitive environment, would you say that the competition for federal governments is at an all-time high?
I think it has been for a number of years.
Okay.
It's very competitive, and I've seen openings and the higher up the food chain you get, the fewer applications generally you get. So the lower level jobs, I've seen attract hundreds of applications. But the good news is that most of those applications are terrible. I've been on hiring panels, and most of them are terrible.
Right.
If you do a great application, it's going to stand out.
Really. Really.
You might have to try. Perseverance is always important.
Sure. You know, with all of that, and as you're kind of, as people are maybe kind of reading through your book and getting that good advice and kind of getting that inspiration, because you got a lot of people who are frustrated, and then you get that dynamic of people saying, oh, all these job announcements are fixed. You know, I mean, you hear that, you know. I mean, would you being a federal worker, you've been in the game for a while, and you've been to a number of different agencies, so it's not like you just stayed at one agency and didn't search for other jobs. I mean, you have kept the process going from, I know, your career. I mean, what would you say to that person who's frustrated and thinking that all the jobs are fixed?
Well, first of all, it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
But like in any sector, like I said, seeing is believing for hiring managers. And if they know you and know what you can do, they're going to be more prone to hire you than if you're a stranger. That's just human nature. You want somebody who you already know is reliable.
Sure.
You want your Cal Ripken in there.
Yeah.
So
your reputation precedes yourself.
First of all, network so that you can be the favored person.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I've gotten jobs and I've coached hundreds and hundreds of people into jobs where they didn't have a connection in the world. So I know from my own experience watching the system that it's a relatively small percentage that are rigged. And I also know that some pre-selected jobs don't end up being pre-selected because the favored child ended up not applying for whatever reason.
Right.
Or the
favorite child may be a favorite of a couple different people. And they end up, you know, going over to the highest bidder.
Right.
You know, and so they may not even go to where they thought, you know, people thought they were going to go.
Exactly. So I tell people to apply for everything that they qualify for.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned networking, and I want to talk about this. We got to take a quick break, but I want to talk about this as we come back, because a lot of people get concerned about networking. Should they network? Should they call? Should they, you know, will federal, you know, if I try to reach out to a hiring official, will they be irritated if I try to contact them? Should I go to conferences? I want to get your take on that.
Sure.
Okay, when we come back. We're talking to Lily Whiteman. She is the author of How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job. It's out right now. Lady, where can they find it?
Amazon.com.
Amazon.com.
Bookstores and BarnesandNobles.com.
BarnesandNobles.com. Amazon.com is out there. She's contributing to the Washington Post. She's a Federal Times columnist. She's out there. She's a federal worker. She knows her business. And you can find a book. It's out there right now. We'll take a quick break. We're talking about federal jobs, how to get them. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we are talking about federal jobs. And specifically, we're talking about how to land a top-paying federal job, because that is the title of the book by Lily Whiteman. She is a Federal Times columnist. She contributes to the Washington Post from time to time. She is the author of this book, and she's a federal worker. So she's been there, done that. She's been around the federal workforce about 20 years, right, Lily?
That's right.
Yeah. So she's been there, done that, worked in a number of different agencies. She's got this book out here right now with a lot of valuable advice. Lily, we were talking about networking before we left. You know, a lot of people get concerned. And I tell people this all the time. I know you give the same advice. But how would you suggest somebody who may have that fear of networking? How do you suggest they kind of either get past it? Should they cold email, a cold call as a conference? Maybe the agency has something going on, do you go to it? What do you suggest?
Well, first of all, I want to emphasize the power of networking. Somebody I went to school with, I saw at a reunion, and she told me the story that she was pounding the pavements in D.C. without pay dirt at all.
Mm-hmm.
And she did that for 3 months. And then she decided to call the school where she got her graduate degree. Mm-hmm. She got the names of everybody who worked at the federal agency that she wanted to work at. Mm-hmm. And one by one, she called them. And she said within 3 days, she had a job offer. That's the power of networking.
Wow.
And these were people.
3 months versus 3 days. She
didn't even know these people.
Wow.
They just had the school in common.
That's right.
So when you have something in common with people like that, they're much more likely to go out of their way for you than a stranger.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important. And the first thing is, if you're fearful of it, figure out why you're so fearful and try to address it with, whether it's talking it through somebody or having your personal cheerleader or a self-help book or seeing a professional, whatever it takes to get over it. And also, in this day and age, you don't even have to get dressed and into your business suit and go out and network. Right. You can stay home in your feet pajamas and network online.
Right.
A colleague of mine recently got a job through LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
There's blogs now for federal mm-hmm. employees mm-hmm. and government workers.
Mm-hmm.
So you. And I know that some of these websites have generated jobs for people. So I say try to be as out there as you can.
Would you say this, and I say this sometimes, would you say be proactive rather than reactive?
I think when you need a friend, it's too late to make them. You've mm-hmm. got to use the ones you already have.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
absolutely. And mm-hmm. I tell people to, I advise people and try to do this myself, to stay as touch with as many of my former colleagues as mm-hmm. possible, because
you never know.
As your career develops, so will they theirs, and they can be your tentacles into organizations
right.
that you otherwise couldn't get to. So yes, go to all the events you can. Try to do details in other offices if
right.
you can. And just meet as many people as you can and keep in touch with them.
Right. You know, as you're talking about this, you got a section in the book that talks about fast track into management, you know, and I think a lot of people are thinking about that. I mean, a lot of people, you know, they don't mind going to entry level, but they are thinking about how do I get into that upper level of working for the government? And, you know, just what are just some of the tips that you're giving in this section about how to get into this? I know you're going to get the details is when you read the book, but just what are some of the comments, just a small little slither of tips?
Well, one of the ways is your starting point really matters in the federal government, because you've got to climb that chain mm-hmm. rung by rung, and you really can't skip rungs right. in most cases. So one of the things I have in the book is a comprehensive list of fellowship and internship programs. It's not only the government-wide ones like the Presidential Management Program. There, almost every agency, and this is one of the best-kept secrets in government, almost every agency and department has a special internship program for current students, recent graduates, recent law school graduates, recent graduates of various kinds of degree programs, and even for mid-career changers. And most of these programs, they're specifically designed to give people substantive experience and to vault them into management positions. They're not designed, you know, a lot of people think internship programs, you don't get paid and you're serving people coffee. These programs like Health and Human Services Emerging Leaders Program, that's just one example, it's mm-hmm. 2 years of rotations, mentoring, trainings, really designed to get ahead quickly.
And you're seeing a lot more emphasis in with some of these agencies in internship programs. I mean, as using them as a way to really, you know, bring in that new crop of workers. I mean, of course, they may put out some job announcements here and there, but I do see a lot more internships and fellowships at certain agencies because they've seen the usefulness of them.
Right, and it's part of backfilling for the retirement wave.
Right. You know, with all of that, for the experienced professional, can they still use these programs, or would you say for the experienced professional, then you should just kind of be focusing in on maybe certain job announcements? I mean, can they still kind of jump in on anything like that?
I think that's, yes, they can. I know a lot of these programs do take career changers,
okay.
and it's a great way if you want to get into a new field, this is a way to get training and experience
right.
while you're making a living doing
right.
it.
Right.
And
right.
I know, for example, a New York City police officer who used the GAO, Government Accountability Office's program, to put his pistol and bulletproof vest away and he got a job,
right.
started a new career in policy. So,
wow.
yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, it is possible. Some of it's just about strategy.
Right.
Yeah.
And, for example, there are fellowships for scientists in the government that take people in their 70s.
Hmm. Really?
Yes.
Wow. And you can find all this stuff in the book right here. You know, you talk about kind of the dynamics, and there's a number of different things, and you talk about agency headquarters versus field offices, and that really comes to the point about the location of government, which
mm-hmm.
is really nationwide, but then also global,
right.
international, in terms of these offices, you know, being kind of, you know, put into different countries, and they're not just State Department, but you've got other agencies who are also global. I know we'll talk about it, but what is it between, and when you're talking about this piece in the chapter, what do you talk about between agency headquarters versus field offices?
Well, the relative advantages and disadvantages, most people think that most government jobs are in D.C., and that's not so. Only a very relatively small percent are in D.C. Federal government is in every big city in this country and in a lot of other small towns and national parks and research labs and just facilities everywhere. So generally speaking, if you're want to do policy and you want to be near the power, into the power vortex, that's more
that's
likely
that's
to be in D.C. Right. And if you want more of a small community kind of feel to the office and actually do the substantive shovel to the ground work, that usually happens in the field.
Okay.
There are a lot more differences in than that, but those are some.
But would you say for that person who's looking, is it easier to get a job in headquarters than it is in the field? Or it really just depends on either the agency and what they're looking for? I mean, what are you seeing with that?
There's a myth that all of the high GS level jobs are in DC. And I probably proportionally there are more, but there are still many in the field as well.
Okay.
So I think it has to vary on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. You know, as we're looking at it, you kind of talked about the power vortex, and this leads right into the next piece of it about Congress and everything else. You know, some people do want to be a part of Capitol Hill. They do want to work at the Senate or Congress and things like that. One, are these people considered federal workers, you know, if they're working on the Hill? And then two, in those dynamics, I mean, is that a different job search than USA Jobs? If you want to work in Congress and everything else, is that different that you're pointing out in the book?
Yeah, yes, it is different. And I think it's important to remind people that this is an election coming up soon, and that means there's going to be a lot of turnover in Congress. So if you're interested, this is really a time to start working, laying the groundwork for that.
Sure.
And making contacts and figuring out how to do it and getting credentials. And it is a different job search, and I do go through that in the book as well. And most federal career guides really don't distinguish between those two.
Right.
There are a lot of different websites. There are a lot of different techniques. For example, to try to go with the home team, go to the congressman in the area that you grew up in, went to school in, live in, whatever. So there, I give a lot of insider tips like that about how to approach it.
Sure.
And both in person, networking, door to door, knocking on congressional doors as they're unpacking their boxes, or even coming onto a congressional team at the end of a season might be good because everybody else is leaving and this is a time to get your foot in the door.
That's right.
So,
you know, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I know you got an area on here about kind of security clearances, but one more important point, you're talking about kind of cranking out your application, which is really, really critical about having that powerful, targeted and application that's really selling you. I want to talk about, you know, the tips you're giving in that when we come back. We're talking to Lily Whiteman. She is an author of How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job. It's out there right now on Amazon.com. It's out there at Barnes & Noble's in the bookstores and online. You can find it out there. And she's a Federal Times columnist. She's a Post contributor, and she's also a federal worker. So she's coming from experience of being on both of the sides of giving advice, but mainly also the sides of kind of being that federal worker and knowing the ins and outs of how the federal government works. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking about how to land a top-paying federal job. It's a book that's out. Second edition book. When was the first edition, Lily?
It came out in 2008.
Oh, wow. So we got several years now. A lot has changed since 2008. We have in the studio with us Lily Whiteman. She's a Federal Times columnist. She's a Post contributor. She's been on a number of different areas. She's got the first edition out there, but the second edition is updated with a lot more information on whether it be fellowships, on the job process, on networking, on a little bit of everything, security clearances, and everything else. And we're talking about that today. Lily, you know, you put in here about the security clearance process, which has become a lot more and more and more important. Do you feel, and is there a reason why you put it in the book, do you feel like it's something that people now need to know as they're thinking about a federal job? You've got to start thinking about that ahead of time. Why'd you put that in the book?
Well, for one thing, one of the biggest hires is the military, and they do hire civilians for all types of positions and intelligence organizations. So, and a lot of those jobs do require security clearance. So it's a big area. And if you've got one, it's a great credential. And most people don't know that intelligence agencies hire all types of employees. You would be surprised. They even hire experts in costumes and makeup to help people go undercover. You know, everything.
Graphic designers, all kind of stuff.
Everything. So administrative people, IT people. So keep an open mind when you're looking around, and don't, if you're interested in a particular policy area, you want to veer towards the agency that addresses that. But if you're the type of person that every agency hires, like an HR person, an IT person, an administrative person, you can really look very broadly.
Right. You know, when we talk about cranking out your application, and you mentioned something that is, I think, is critical about the hiring manager and thinking like a hiring manager, kind of like putting your mind of, if I was a hiring manager, what would I be looking for? And have you found it? Because I've talked to a number of different hiring managers, and they always say, you know, I'm seeing a whole bunch of different applications, but I'm not seeing the ones that I want, or I'm not seeing what I want in the applications and everything else. So two questions. One, what do you mean by thinking about a hiring manager? And then two, how do you make sure that you get seen by that hiring manager?
Well, one thing, way to think like a hiring manager is to become one. If you work someplace where somebody is being hired, try to get on that decision-making team, because it will be a completely eye-opening experience about how people present themselves, and you will get a lot of information that you can apply to your own career. And when I'm coaching people, I ask them if they've ever been a hiring manager, and I ask them to remember what they experienced, and it does help. It's very helpful to them. And the gist of it is, the book does go through the process by which the federal hiring system works, and that's really not anywhere else. And that's really important to, you can't really work the system unless you know how the system works.
Right.
The gist of it, I think, everywhere is that they are in a rush. And they don't read applications like they're John Grisham novels.
Right.
So they're sitting by the fire with their cat,
sipping
Chardonnay,
right.
glued to every page as it turns. They whip by them fast. And I asked one hiring manager, how long do you think you spend on an application? And he said, about, I can tell within 10 seconds. And then he said, no, really five. So you really have only a few seconds to impress hiring managers, and that means that you've got to make your best credentials leap off of the page and stick in their brain like verbal Velcro. And that part of that is formatting, and part of it is what you say.
Right.
But the gist of it is, I really think people should show their application to a trusted advisor and ask, give them 5 or 10 seconds and say, can you see what my biggest credentials are? And if they can't, keep working.
You know, I know you've been on hiring panels, and we've talked about this, about kind of the insight, the value of what you've seen on a hiring panel. If you just had, maybe even just, if you had to take two just critical words of wisdom, or two critical pieces of advice that you would give being on the other side of a hiring manager, that things you saw, either that people either made mistakes or things in which really blew you away and said, I want to hire this person. What would be those two things?
I would say make it a fast read, like I just said, and make it make your best credentials.
Now, when you say make it a fast read, does that mean, are you shortening, or are you just making it that it is clear and concise and that people can read it in the right fashion?
Both. A lot of people think that a federal application needs to be as long as Princess Diana's wedding train
was.
Right. And like I said, they read applications fast.
Mm-hmm.
Hone it down. Give them, don't make them look for the needle in the haystack.
Mm-hmm.
Give them just the needle.
Mm-hmm.
And if some,
give them what they're looking for.
Look at a credential and say to yourself, is this credential really going to help me get my job, or am I just attached to it because it was part, an important part of my life? And if it's not going to help you get the job, it's just going to.
So get rid of the miscellaneous and keep the targeted stuff in, the relevant stuff.
Exactly.
Okay. Gotcha.
Exactly. And an example of, you really want to do everything better than the competition.
Mm-hmm.
So every piece of paper, every meeting, every contact you have with hiring managers counts. And here's an example, a tip I give in the book is in the cover letter. And a lot of people, that's another mistake. Not a lot of people don't give a cover letter. A cover letter is a great chance to give your best stuff up top and to show your personality too, and to show your enthusiasm and your knowledge of your target organization. The way I do cover letters is I make a table with two columns. One column is your needs, and you define what they're looking for, hopefully the things that you have. Right. And then the other column is my credentials, and put it in a table. And that makes for a fast read, and they don't even have to read the table to know you're qualified.
Right.
And I have seen this work time and time again. I had one client I was working with who literally had sent out dozens of applications, and she got the first job, and she took it that she used that table. I had another client who went to an interview, and she said the interviewer had underlined things in the letter. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, tangible evidence. Mm-hmm. They read it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get your thing read.
You got to get it read. That's right. And that's the key thing right there. And that's what that thinking like a hiring manager is how to think in a way to get them to read this. You talk about your bragging rights. What are you talking about with this? I know we mentioned success stories. Is that what that is, your bragging rights?
Yes. And what I mentioned before, too, about validating. Mm-hmm. I think one of the number one mistakes I see when I work with people is they won't underestimate their own achievements. Mm. They don't show the grandeur, the breadth, the depth.
And some people have just been beat up at the workplace.
Right.
You know, they've been beat up in certain environments they may have come from or whatever the case is. And so their self-esteem may be shot or other things. But, you know, they need to feel that, say, listen, you, and I always tell people this, you've done much more than you may even be thinking about. And you need to think about all the success stories that you have, not based on just a performance review, but just everything you've done.
Right, exactly. So some years ago, a staffer of a congressperson came to me, and her resume read something like this, draft press releases, I plan media coverage, I conduct research, just these kind of generic statements that didn't show the level that she was working at. Compare, I draft press releases to, I serve as a top communications expert for Congressman X, who is ranked by Congress.org as the 10th most influential of 435 members of the House. I excel at working in a high-profile, deadline-driven environment.
Wow. A complete change.
And that's the same person.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's what I mean about showing the depth and breadth of what you've done.
But you know what? A lot of people are they hear about keywords. And so they think, you know, keywords, so they go to a job description and they pull these keywords things out and they just put all these keywords in without expansion, without putting the power and the flavor and all those other kind of pieces in. And that was what you're saying in the book is that's what makes a difference.
And I show in the book exactly how to do that. Mm. I give a step-by-step process of how to show the depth and breadth of what you have done and how it's most impressive.
You wrote the book in a language that, you know, and you know, we talk about plain language with government. You know, the hiring reform talked about plain language. I don't think the hiring reform really did that with a lot of government applications. But for you, you wrote the book in a kind of more a plain language style.
A lot of people think that anything that has to do with the government needs to be as in a dull and frumpy style as the tax code, you know, and bureaucratic. But you got to remember, when you again thinking like a hiring manager, these people are people, and so I really recommend writing and you never know who's going to read your application. They don't know your organization, your acronyms, your life. Mm-hmm. So you got to write in as reader-friendly way as possible. And that's what I've tried to do with the book, too, is
make it easy to read
and humorous. I think that you've got, unless something involves pain or death, you got to keep your sense of humor.
Yeah, because it is so much. I mean, even with the government, you're dealing with so many serious issues. You know, sometimes you just have to have that a little bit more, lighten it up a little bit.
And the job search is tough, so you've got to entertain yourself through it. And motivation, too. I give a lot of true life success stories of tricks people have used, and not tricks in the sense of underhandedness, but just
strategies.
The way they've, what's worked out well for them. And can I go back for one second to the point of people underestimating themselves? Because this is really important. the first step in the process is usually, well, most federal applications have short answer questions where the applicant is asked to rank themselves in tiered responses. And I've seen so many people underestimate themselves in those questions and not rate themselves as highly as they could. This is self-rating. Nobody said in the instructions, grade yourself harshly. Troll through, when you fill out those questions, because the answers to those questions will be rated by a computer, and unless you score highly on those questions, the human eyes will never get to your application. So you want to give yourself, people also think they'll get points for candor. You don't have to self-incriminate yourself.
Right.
When you answer those questions, give yourself as high a rating as you can while you go back through your background and try to think of anything that relates to that would qualify you for it.
So what you're saying is and stop being too humble.
Right.
Sometimes we're too humble, in which we almost shoot ourselves in the foot. And then also, you know, pull your self-esteem out and get it. We're not bragging like that. We're not being arrogant, but we're being confident.
So I think Mark Twain said, if you've done it, it ain't bragging.
That's right. We got to take a quick break. We're talking to Lily Whiteman. She is the author of How to Land a Top Paying Federal Job. It's out there right now. Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's, BN.com, I think is Barnes & Noble's website. She's a Federal Time columnist. She's a federal worker. She's been on the Washington Post. She's got a lot of great information in this book. It's his second edition, been expanded with a lot of great more information than the first edition. You got to pick it up today. We'll be right back talking to Lily Whiteman, closing out the show with some great advice on kind of going through the rest of her book and looking at kind of the talking stage about the dynamic of how do you sell yourself on interviews. We'll be right back at this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having a great conversation with the author out there who has written How to Land a Top Paying Federal Job. And we all want to get that advice right there. Lily Whiteman, she's a Federal Times columnist. She's a federal worker. She's been around and she knows the game, and she's put a lot of her strategies and her tips and advice that she has learned throughout the years in this book right now in this second edition. Lily, let's get right in, because I know we don't have necessarily a whole bunch of time. And I want to talk about this because this is important. You get past the process. You've done your job search. You've got in there. You said you're qualified. They call you. Interview time. Okay. Make a break moment. What are you suggesting? Is an interview in the federal sector different than the private sector? I mean, what are you suggesting in terms of interviews, and how do you get past this?
I think the interviews are generally pretty similar to private sector interviews. And the things to do are to prepare, know yourself, and know your target organization and your interviewer, if possible. And I give tips on this. For example, there's you can get for under $20 a profile of every federal manager.
Right.
And I give the website where you can get that.
Sure, okay.
And information is power. And if you know who you're talking to, you can know what to emphasize. Maybe you have things in common you can riff off of. Yeah. And it'll make you feel more comfortable too if you know this person.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think, oh, I know myself. I know what I've done. I don't have to practice. I can do it. I can wing it. And I say, if you wing it, you're going to crash and burn. Mm-hmm. Practice. I mean, most interviewers are not so creative. They're going to ask you the basic questions. Mm-hmm. And I give lists of these questions in the book, typical questions, and good and bad responses. Mm-hmm. And tell me about yourself, and what are your strengths, and why do you want to work here? And remember, the interview is not about, it's not about you.
Right.
It's about them.
Right.
And you want to show what you can give them. It's not about what you want.
Right.
Once you get the offer, then it's about what you want.
Right. Then it's about negotiation. But like you said, in the interview process, and I hear the same thing. I hear, you know, one, people don't know how to sell themselves, but they don't practice. They don't practice their success stories, and so they think they can just walk in. And most people at that time will freeze up,
right?
You know,
it's
and
stressful.
It's a stress scenario, and it's supposed to be a stress scenario. And so they'll freeze up, and they don't necessarily know how to articulate certain things. And so you could have a best. And I think you're as a professional communicator, you have probably found that some people will completely destroy themselves in this interview who look great on paper.
Exactly. Yep. And you know, everything counts. For example, I know somebody I coached recently, and I happened to know the people that she was interviewing with, and I found out afterwards that before she, my coachee went into the interview, the interviewers were sure they were going to hire somebody else. Then she went in and she was less technically adept and qualified, but she smiled a lot and was a lot more personable than their original pick.
Right.
So she got the job.
Right.
So a lot of it's too is about just showing that you can fit into the organization and that you're reliable and congenial.
You know, you've been on hiring panels. How much would you say, and just kind of speaking, you know, from your own personal experience, how much would you say is about technical, somebody knowing, having that technical knowledge, and how much would you say it's about personality in terms of when they're making that final decision? I think people need to know this because, you know, when somebody is looking at them, how do you gauge it? Is it more personality or is it both that are equal, 50-50?
I think by the time you get to the interview stage, pretty much everybody's got the technical expertise, but they still want to double check that. They want to hear you describe what you've done, even if it's on paper. And it's about showing that you fit in. A lot of it is, yes.
So a lot of it's personality.
Right.
When it gets down to that piece.
And everything counts, like the thank you letter. I call it the post-obligatory kiss-up letter
because that's what it is.
It ain't over till it's over.
You got to keep kissing
that
up.
That could make the difference. And don't send the email that is completely forgettable. Send an overnight delivery letter.
Right.
Spend the $20.
Right.
It could easily get you to the job. And think, what would stand out more on your desk? An email that you get 100 of them a day or an overnight delivery personalized letter that says, refers to things that you learned in the interview.
Have you found being on the other side, and even as you're giving advice, have you found that so many people have lost that sense of the thank you, that sense of those small acts, the written note, that sense of that, you know, overnight sending it, and that now it's almost that wow factor. It stands out more.
Yes, absolutely. Manners are rare
going
thing.
Away now.
And like I said, you want to do everything better than your competition, and that's one way to do something better than your competition. Again, know yourself, know your target hiring manager and target organization. Enthusiasm is so important. You want to pretend, even if it's not true, that you have wanted to work
good,
at this place.
And I want this place.
Wanted to work at this place since you rolled out of the room.
Right. You know, and we got about 60 seconds, but in terms of salary negotiation, can you negotiate? Because people think that you can't. And then also, last comments before we get out of here.
Is this salary negotiable? Maybe the foremost, that is four words, four most valuable words in the English language. Because that can be enough to substantially increase your salary offer. Remember, it can accumulate over a career. And I've helped people raise their salary offers by thousands, even tens of thousands of dollars. And I explain how to do that in the book.
Outstanding. So salary is negotiable in federal government.
Even in tough economic times. All they can do is say no. They're not going to retract the offer. I've never seen it happen.
Outstanding. What's the last comments before we get out?
Good luck in your career.
The book is out there, How to Land a Top Paying Federal Job. Lily has written the advice down, so she doesn't have to say anything else. Go take a look at the book, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's, BN.com. You can find it out there. It's a great book. We're looking forward to having more of these out there. We're looking forward to having you on the show again and kind of talk about what's going on and what's been happening. There's still more in here. We just don't have time today, but we're going to have you back so we can continue to talk about these different things. Thank you, Lily.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.